you're talking before about Lenny Dykstra showing up at your stew with a briefcase with a gun in it.
Yeah.
Which sounds, that's pretty fucking
was
scary.
Was it like a handgun?
Yeah, so Lenny Dykstra rolls with a piece. He's got a handgun. For a while, on Part of My Take, we had him as our chief financial correspondent.
Well, he founded that magazine for like athletrepreneurs,
yes.
You know?
Yes, he founded a magazine for current players, I think. He was like, here's how to spend a lot of money while you're an athlete. That's something that they need a lot of help with.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything athletes need help with, it's having CTE, then starting a restaurant that fails, and then they have a weird family falling out with a brother-in-law,
yes.
And then go bankrupt.
Right. So you're going to want to have your appetizers be called kickoffs. Yeah. Your desserts are extra points.
Yeah. What if you, in the bathroom, hear me out here, you have autographed memorabilia, but it's not from you. It's from a less well-known player because you want to monetize your own memorabilia.
I like that idea. I also like having toilet paper that has like your big rival's face on
it.
That's always a classic.
And like other celebrity restaurateurs, bathroom cameras for all the women who are going to the bathroom in there.
You're actually perfectly describing Jerome Bettis' restaurant. I was there like a month ago, and it's almost the exact same thing, except the urinals, you can just look out over. I think they have TVs in there where you can look at the dining room. So you go to the bathroom, take a piss, and you can just make sure that your girl's still being respectful of you while you're gone from the table.
You know, the saddest...
I told you not to use your phone while I'm gone.
The saddest casualty, as someone from Milwaukee, the saddest casualty of the Ryan Braun steroid scandal was that it was the death knell to his two restaurants that he had in Milwaukee, one of which was a scratch Italian place, which was sort of like a bro pasta restaurant. And then he had another one that he co-owned with his buddy Aaron Rodgers. It was like MVPs, and it was their two numbers. And they had to close them both. And I'm sad because I never got to try either of them because I bet they were amazing.
That's very sad.
Bettis was a Penn State guy, right?
Bettis, yeah. No, Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. Okay, yeah. Shit. Who's the running back who went to?
Franco Harris.
Okay. All right, so there was no like,
there was no
Paterno memorabilia.
Paterno tie. Okay. Well, I'm sure there probably. Well, I mean, it's in Pittsburgh, so you can't swing a dead cat without hitting like a mini statue of Joe Paterno there.
You could make an amazing coffee table book out of the failed investment projects of professional athletes.
We had we had the Michael Jordan Steakhouse in Chicago, and I never went in there, but I imagined like if you went in there with like normal fitting pants that weren't acid washed, it was like when they made you put on a jacket. They're like, could you actually put on this like weirdly big Oxford shirt and these acid washed kind of like half JNCOs? You're not up to our dress code, our Michael Jordan dress code. Can you put this weird earring in right now?
I had a birthday party at the Michael Jordan Steakhouse in New York. It's in Grand Central Station.
That's how you know it's good. It's right in the train station. It's so like when people come out of town to go there, they're right there. That's a sign of quality.
So, sorry, back to nails. The Lenny Dykstra. He started a magazine that was like investment advice for athletes. So it's like you don't blow all your money.
I think it was actually the opposite. I think it was like marketing, like how to live luxuriously.
But he was
serious. Like it sounds like I was joking about that, but that's literally what his.
But in addition to that, though, he was a financial advisor.
Yes, and I think his all-time stock tips went like 501-1. He only had one failure that he'll tell you all about it in his book. Actually, it's 501-2 because we called him. We were in Vegas and we had like $700 that we won on some bet. And we called up Lenny and we said, hey, Lenny, should we put this money on red or black? And he said red. We put it on black and then red hit. So he lost us $700. So he's 501-2. All time. But yeah, Lenny, we used to have a lot of fun with Lenny. We'd call him up and ask him every time there was some sort of like locker room talk in the news, we would have him as our locker room correspondent because he was just a weirdo. He just loved to talk about like, oh yeah, nobody eats pussy like me. Like, if you ever heard him on Howard Stern, they just had him on to like talk about all the cunnilingus he's performed in his life, and hearing him talk about it with like his missing teeth is just ridiculous.
I saw it was a picture someone put online of a Lenny Dykstra signed baseball card that they got at one of those like autograph conventions, and Lenny signed it and it was like to a kid or something, And Lenny signed the card like, I don't know how much pussy you got, but there's no way it was as much as me.
Yeah.
Lenny Dykstra.
That's very true. One time we had Kurt Schilling on the show. This was like, I forget why we wanted to talk to Kurt Schilling, but we kept him on hold for like...
Politics,
yeah,
obviously.
Politics. We wanted to pick his brain. We kept him on hold for like 5 minutes, and we had our hold music was Beyonce singing the national anthem at the Obama inauguration. And so we kept like cutting in on be like, hey, Kurt, are you doing okay? And then I would be like, yeah, Kirk, where should we transfer you to? Like asking him like who he's trying to speak with. Then we put him back on fake hold, keep playing it. And we asked him, once we finally had him on the show, we said, so you shared a locker room with Lenny Dykstra. I bet you guys had a lot of fun back in Philly, huh? And his big funny story about Lenny Dykstra was, yeah, Lenny was great. One time there was a female reporter in the locker room. And Lenny had a boner, and he just kept staring at his boner and then looking at her and then looking at his boner again. It was hilarious. And we're like, yeah, that sounds...
Can't make this up, man.
What a guy. What a guy.
So I bring up Lenny Dykstra and his magazine that's his Success Win magazine for athletes.
Yes.
And I remember watching HBO's Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, and it was a segment hosted by fucking Bernard Goldberg, the guy, author of the great book, 100 Sickos Who Are Screwing Up America. He did a segment on a package on Lenny Dykstra about, like, you know, you may think this guy is a goofball, but he's actually a genius. And it was all about, like, you know, he took over a chain of car washes, and now he's a millionaire. And he's like, he's Mr. Deals. Like, he plays the stock market, and he's a genius. And then... years later, they did another segment on Real Sports that was a follow-up with Bernard Goldberg, where they were checking in on Lenny after he had lost all his money and completely shit the bed. And I never forget, Bernard Goldberg asked Lenny Dykstra, who's like, again, slurring and like being sullen, like, how much money do you have in the bank? Like, how drastic are your finances? And he goes, money? What the fuck you want? You want some fucking money? I got $70 right here. And he takes like crumpled bills out of his pocket. And Bernard Goldberg goes, no, Lenny, I'm not talking about the money in your pocket. How are your finances? Uh-huh. But I love the idea of Bernard Goldberg originally lauding him as some kind of genius.
That's the thing. Like, if you've ever spent any time talking to Lenny Dykstra, I have no idea how you would ever walk away from that conversation and be like, this guy's got his shit together. Like, I'll give this guy money. Like, he was never a guy, even when he was playing baseball, like he was the guy that would have two cheeks just like completely filled with Red Man, and you couldn't hear him talk. Like he'd even slur when he didn't have a slurring problem because he had so much chewing tobacco in his mouth. I have no idea how he ever scammed people into thinking that he was like an investment guy.
It worked
for a couple years.
It was the glory though of the housing bubble.
Yeah, no.
That was the glory era of American oafry. Every dipshit with any access to capital could just throw money around and it would all end up being profitable because everything was just, all of the money was just making more money and it was just great.
You know what it was? It was when he was on that Phillies team, he might have been like the smart one because it was like the Mount Rushmore of dunces. It was him, Kurt Schilling, John Kruk, and Mitch Williams. So yeah, he was the brains behind the operation on that Phillies team.
I remember there were multiple CNBC reports about Lenny Dykstra in like 2007. Like, right, the financial crisis really started in like 2007 when Citibank announced like this unexpected loss, and it caused like a bunch of options and like debt instruments to snap up. But before that, like, all it was, yeah, the Lenny Dykstra segment on Squawk Box or whatever fucking show was on CNBC. And it was like, you may think this guy is a submental toad, but he's actually investing his money. And then they would talk to Lenny Dykstra and he's like, you know, you got your fucking Dow Jones, you got your stock market, you got your money markets. You just put all that shit in there and boom.
Yeah. And
it was because it was that easy. It was such a bull market that like you could just get an ape to throw a dart at something and you would probably make money.
He was playing the Japanese stock market. What's that called?
The Nikkei.
The Nikkei. Yeah. Well, again, it does clue into the connection between, you know, athletes at the highest level who are almost all degenerate gamblers as well, because they need that fix in their life once the game is gone. But I guess I should just start the show.
Yeah.
In case you haven't figured it out already, we're talking to host of Pardon My Take, PFD commenter.
Yes.
How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. That's my real name. That's my actual name.
Oh, you're Catholic.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, we're talking Sborbs balls here today. Ugh. So if you're some kind of nerd who doesn't like that, switch off now.
We will not be talking, well, we're probably going to talk esports today too.
Esports and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, the two main sports, the world sports.
Yes.
What will surely overtake the NFL now that's on the way out, Fortnite is on the way up.
That's right. The NFL's dead. I don't know if you guys heard that or not yet, but like, ratings went down at the exact same level that like every television show went down, like, because obviously people are cutting the cord. But it became like a huge political issue, and people are, it's like they're reading into like a Rorschach test. Like, okay, the ratings went down because of my reason. No, it's actually just people not buying fucking cable television. And that's about it.
I mean, people could say, yeah, there's an overall, the internet is like biting into the market share of cable TV and traditional entertainment. But the truth is, no one wants to watch football games since the Players Union had a strike where D-Ray was declared the winner of every game.
It's true.
As they did. They didn't like that.
That was very divisive move in a time that we should be uniting ourselves.
Yeah, it's just not good. It's like everyone wants to forget politics at these games where $300 trillion of military hardware flies above the stadium every 20 minutes.
Dude, don't take away my flyovers. it's a huge waste of money, and it's like a bunch of bullshit, but there's something about being in a stadium when a like F-18 flies directly over you that your balls kind of shake a little bit. You're like, okay, I get it. I kind of get it. This is cool.
If it is, I don't really watch football, but like, I think it should be a punishment. Like, if you're a top tier team, like if you made it to the playoffs last year, you get a flyover. But if you like, if you had a negative record, you just didn't make it, the Coast Guard just drives around your stadium. You're like, oh, thanks.
And worst record gets a strafing run.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. I think the solution to the anthem thing is just only the team that won the Super Bowl should be the only team that's allowed to stand for the national anthem. Because they're winners, and that's what the flag represents.
The flyover of the Super Bowl is actually the only successful combat mission for the F-35.
I'm pretty sure that one would crash if they tried to fly over a stadium.
I want to talk about the NFL anthem stuff with you, but before, it is the NBA finals right now.
Yeah.
You know, so let's talk basketball, and you're the perfect person that I wanted to ask about this. Can you explain to me the hilarious story about the Brian Colangelo's fake Twitter accounts and the owner of the 76ers?
I mean, the story's enveloping as we speak.
Like, okay, so where are we at so far?
So what's happening, what we know for facts are that there were 5 burner accounts at least, and they would respond to...
Like Egg Avatar, are we talking here?
Egg Avatars. One was called Eric Jr. One was like Sixers with like 9 numbers after it. but they would reply to stories to like members of the media or sometimes players even, and offer up very sensitive information about stuff that was going on inside the building that he would be the only person to know about, or he would be one of, you know, a handful of maybe 3 or 4 people that could possibly know about it. And somebody, we're thinking the former GM of the 76ers, who was, he was essentially fired and pushed out the door because he tanked the team for 4 or 5 years in a row just to get good draft picks. His name's Sam Hinkie, and everybody in Philly loves this guy. They forced him out because the team was very clearly losing games on purpose, and he was mad that he got forced out, and all the good players that he got were now winning under Colangelo. So they're thinking that Sam Hinkie discovered these burner accounts and sent like a message to the Ringer saying, hey, look into these things. I think this is Colangelo. So it turns out that a couple of them were tweeting while he was doing press conferences too, so they can't all be him. They've been tied to his wife now.
They were like, they were tweeting during press conference and defending like his outfit from people who were roasting him for that, like, you know, big collars, much, yeah, my bitch. And then they'd be like, hey, you know, I'm a fashion expert, and Brian, that he looks great.
Yeah, that was my favorite one. It said like, actually, that's a very normal collar. move along and find a new slant or something like that. It reminded me of I saw somebody tweet about this, about the tall guy on The Simpsons who was like, this is the largest auto I can afford. But when you go back and you look at his collars now, some of them are a little bit big, but even the ones that aren't that big, now all you can see is like a giant collar. So it is, yeah, he is a giant collar guy.
So, but like, was he doing it, like, he was also responding to Sixers players, too, and like, sort of like, trying to get under their skin to motivate them or something, to talk shit to Joel Embiid or whatever?
Joel Embiid, Jahlil Okafor was another one, I think, where he would just respond and say, hey, your team's taking care of you the best they can. They're trying to get you a good way out of town, and they're looking, you know, they're looking out for your career. And it's just a really bizarre story. They haven't figured out. I mean, how is that investigation going to go? They're going to be like, hey, was that you that had all those burner accounts? He's going to say no, and they're going to say, oh, okay, and that's the end of the investigation. Like, I don't know how else it can go, but it's just a bizarre, bizarre story.
Well, what blows me away over and over again is seeing these rich, powerful guys. Like, Colangelo comes from a sports dynasty, right? Like, Elon Musk is the same thing. Like, you're that rich, you have that much power. Why do you have to fucking post?
You gotta post, man.
Why do you have to post?
You can't. All the money in the world can't buy likes and retweets. Like, it feels good, even if you're like a billionaire. You gotta get those likes off.
That's terrifying to think of, though.
I don't think it's surprising at all, and I think it portends badly. It's not surprising because it's like, you know, we have this guy in Illinois, Jim Oberweis, who he's a like big Republican guy, and he's actually like he's literally an ice cream baron. Like, he sells like high-end dairy and dairy, and it was always funny because he was like one of Dennis Hastert's biggest patrons, and it's funny that it's like, oh man, of course the fat guy has the ice cream baron. It couldn't just be like a Koch brother or something.
Turns out there's another reason that Hastert liked the ice cream guy.
Yeah, yep.
He got to drive the truck.
This thing's a pussy magnet. He ran for governor, I think, 4 times and spent an 8-digit amount every time, and every single time came in 3rd or 4th place in the Illinois GOP primary. And there are tons of rich guys like this who just do something they suck at because they're like, well, I have all this money. I'm like great at everything. And I think like posting is the final frontier.
Mm-hmm.
And Elon Musk, he's like gotten a fan base of posters who are, as Stefan Heck pointed out, all from the Netherlands for some reason. But I think it portends badly because, like, now they're trying to get in the honest way, right? They're just trying to win favor with good post, which they just can't do. They don't really have a good poster's mentality. Mm-hmm. But it means eventually they're going to get sick of, like, getting owned by people, and they're just going to make it. They're going to pretty much, it's already happening. You're not going to be allowed to like fuck with a rich person on the internet much longer, I think, because they're going to be sick of this shit where people like, where it's like one realm they don't have control over. You're going to get banned just for like, I don't know, telling Elon Musk that all the Grime songs sort of sound the same or something.
You know, like that dating website, Elite Singles.
Yeah,
there should just be a social network for, you have to have, you know, $1 billion to qualify. It's just a bunch of billionaires just sucking each other off over bad posts.
Oh, yeah, billionaire gab.
Yeah.
There aren't that many billionaires, so you won't get the rush of getting that nice 5K retweets or something like that. You know, right, really hitting the jackpot with it.
Well, you can just game the system, and like in football tricked me because for the longest time I was like, football is awesome because it's high scoring, and then one day I just realized that every point is really just worth 7 points, and that's why it's high scoring. That's why I like the big numbers. So just make it so like one retweet is actually worth like 1,000. They're like, oh yeah, I got 2,000.
You can get the same rush. I misspoke. Colangelo is the GM, not the owner. But yeah, sports teams owners definitely have that pathology of like, because they think they're part of the team and they want to like, you know, they think they are an athlete in a way. And like, even though he's not a poster, my favorite example of this is maybe one of the worst owners in sports, James Dolan, owner of the Knicks and the MSG company. My favorite thing he ever did was he required MSG employees to come to his gigs of his like white man blues band called JD and the Straight Shot.
Oh yeah,
where he literally does his lead vocals and plays harmonica, doing like, you know, like blue, just atrocious blues rock for like yacht people.
That's the awesome thing about money is you get to make everybody be your friend. You're like the kid from The Toy, and everybody is Richard Pryor. Awesome.
I would love to see what Dan Snyder, the owner of the Redskins, would do if he started a band. He would try to get into rap. I feel like Dan Snyder would definitely be a SoundCloud rapper. He'd start taking Xanax and
he would just be
bar out.
The first like Xanned out All Lives Matter rapper.
Yeah.
Combine two great things. Well, like my favorite genre of rap is not SoundCloud rap, it's Facebook rap. And it's always like a white guy with just like sort of like a chin strap who's like, yo, you could actually be racist to white people too. That's the entire point of my song. And just has like a very simple duplicate flow. And it's like, but when you say I'm bad because I'm white, what you really mean is that you're not right. And it just, all the comments are like boomers who are like, you know, I didn't like rap before, but this is great. That would be Dan Schneider, but he would be on Xanax because he's rich.
That would be amazing.
He would have multicolored dreads.
I would pay money to see Dan Schneider rap.
Dan Gilbert is another like rich guy who's like, just every time he says anything, he's like, yeah, this is going to go great. I'm great at talking to people.
He was the Cavs owner who got really salty about LeBron taking his talents to Miami.
The Comic Sans letter.
He speaks in Comic Sans. Like, if a dude can talk in font, Dan Gilbert absolutely talks in Comic Sans. And it's funny watching LeBron, like when they won the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, everybody walks past the owner and shakes their hand. LeBron James just like straight up ignored him. He just hates him. He hates him so much. I hope what I really want to see happen is LeBron James go back to the Cavaliers at some point in exchange for equity in the team and like be the first player owner, which he actually might be. And just also, please, LeBron, if you're listening, bring Deli back. Thank you.
Well, it's the NBA Finals right now. Let's talk about it. LeBron, I think we can finally say overrated.
Definitely. Absolutely. Very overrated.
Yeah.
Very, very overrated.
I think he's the league's
worst general manager.
I think he needs to pass more often, personally.
He needs to pass more often.
He needs to be a leader.
Yeah, except at times when I think that he should really be in control of the game and shoot, because Jordan never passed. So it's like you can take it both ways. Skip Bayless is really good at that.
Yeah.
My favorite Skip Bayless trick is before a series starts. You know, he's been a long time LeBron James hater.
Yeah,
he hates him for whatever reason. I don't know.
Any sanity, like at the point where like any normal person could make that argument.
Yeah, Skip Bayless dreams of windmills, and like, all the mills are just LeBron James's hands blocking his takes.
After the 3-1 playoff, like finals comeback. Like,
yeah. There's no real reason to hate LeBron James besides the fact that, like, yeah, sometimes he milks injuries a little bit and makes sure that the camera's on him, which I can actually get myself worked up about, so I'm going to stop. There's no chance that you can hate LeBron James. He said before the series, he flipped it on him. He goes, I actually think that LeBron James is good enough to beat the Warriors in 5 games. So what he's doing is he's setting that up so that when the Warriors lose, and by the way, the Warriors were like 13-point favorites. So when the Warriors win, which they're, you know, clearly the better team, then he can call LeBron James a fraud for not living up to his own expectations. And treat him like he's like his little son. Like, you disappointed me. I put my faith in you.
Well, and like in these games, like LeBron maybe sits for like 2 minutes. He's on the court the entire game. And the other thing I saw Skip Bayless say, he's like, oh yeah, you know, LeBron's, you know, numbers are impressive. But if you really want to see like what taking over a game is like, watch Manu Ginobili play. He can change the game instantly coming on off the bench.
That's right. Yeah, ask any general manager. They'll say, give me 5 Manu Ginobilis and like Matthew Dellavedova with one knee, and you can make a championship team. No, LeBron, like, it's over. You can't say that LeBron James is not a great player unless you just want to stir the pot, and that's what Skip Bayless is really good at doing. Or he used to be good at doing it. Now he's like a caricature of himself a little bit.
The LeBron hater is like the most interesting archetype in sports to me, because it's like, I think like John Boyce had something about this where it was like, if you were a LeBron hater until about like 2015, you were just like generally just a joyless person.
Yeah.
And it made me think of this guy that I knew in Minnesota who is just like, you know how there'll be a growth of dumb guys in Midwestern State, and there'll just be like a dumb guy at the bot, like that the dumbest guy in the group of dumb guys. Mm-hmm. This was one of those guys we knew.
And what do you call a group of dumb guys? Is it like a court of owls or one of those weird animals?
I don't know. I'll have to think of the terminology.
Call them congressmen.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
You call it a podcast.
Open myself up for that one.
But he was like, I think this was like 2012, 2013, so I forget which game we were watching, but he was like, oh, another great play by LeBitch. And we were like, oh man, good one. He's like, thanks. And it's just always the image in my mind of like a guy who just pathologically hates LeBron is that guy.
Now, LeBron does give people a lot to laugh at because he's not, his public image is not, you know, he puts a lot of stuff out there that opens him up to be ridiculed.
Yeah, like, his hairline,
like,
for one.
The hair, the always changing hairline is a classic. He was wearing like an AC/DC outfit before the last game. Mm-hmm. He was wearing a full suit, but he had the shorts, like the suit shorts
oh,
on.
So, right, yeah,
so
yeah.
After the game, he was like really mad. They lost in heartbreaking fashion game one. And he's just like yelling at reporters, or he's like glaring at him with his eyes. He's very, very upset. He's like, is that it? Okay, I'm out. And they just stood up. And then you're like, oh yeah, he's wearing the shorts. And it was like it was like an additional punchline on top of that. And people also forget that LeBron James showed his dick to the world like 2 years ago in the pregames. He was just like adjusting his shorts and the cameras were right on him. And he just pulled his dick out. Like his dick popped out for a half second to the point where everybody was like, wait, was that LeBron James's dick? And then everyone rewound and they're like, yeah, LeBron James just pulled his nuts out on TV.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. And he also makes his teammates read books. So he made him read. He got everybody reading The Godfather last year.
Okay,
awesome.
Yeah.
At least that's fiction. I was terrified for a second. You were going to say Malcolm Gladwell or fucking the 48 Laws of Power or some shit like that.
No,
you know?
Definitely not. Like, but yeah, LeBron's more basic than that, I think. And he also got everybody in his like inner circle really into drinking wine. And I think that's why he's such a bad general manager. He just gets drunk and trades away all of his teammates. Like he loves red wine so much. It's all he puts on Instagram. He started saying sheesh a lot, which I saw him like Instagram sheesh 10 times in maybe 5 days. And I was like, I'm going to make some money off that. So I started selling a t-shirt that just was a bottle of wine that said sheesh in the NBA logo. So I'm just capitalizing on LeBron James's like social media faux pas right now. It's a pretty lucrative industry.
That sounds like as soon as he retires, he's going to start posting full time. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
I don't know. I feel like he'll be as divisive in his posting career as he was in his regular career, but I'm going to cheer him on for that.
Well, the good thing is Michael Jordan isn't a poster, so you can't have the MJ versus LeBron debate about that.
Michael Jordan would be the best poster just because he's the biggest piece of shit in the world. Like, he rocks. He has the one, like, core talent you need to be a great poster, and he's just a completely spiteful piece of shit.
Yeah.
Never let anything go.
You never let any... Yeah. His speech getting inducted into what, like, the Hall of Fame was like, here's everyone who ever wronged me for the past 35 years. Like, yeah. That's perfect. He's a forum poster. He has forum poster fundamentals.
Yes.
But the LeBron... I didn't know about the LeBron Godfather thing, because that's one of the greatest dumb guy works of fiction of all time. Yeah. Like, dumb guys love The Godfather. They think there are good lessons in there.
Yeah, and he, if you watch closely, every game he'd be walking through the tunnel, they'd show him holding the book, and he had his bookmark in there, and the bookmark never moved. It was just like, it was just a prop for him to just let people know that he was reading books.
Oh, I just love the part in there where The Godfather eats spaghetti and goes, to respect somebody, you must know them. But to know them, you must respect them. Yeah. That's really, I love that part.
It's funny because everybody around LeBron James is such a fuck up. And he's so good that it's funny to watch him deal with all these people that are just like so clearly inferior to him.
J.R. Smith, obviously the boneheaded move at the end of game one that's now the mean. But J.R. really is the king. Like,
yes.
He's the best. The classic, you're trying to get the pipe tweet, drinking Henny out of the bottle, smoking blunts. J.R. is a guy... As I think you said, Phyllis, he's just one of those guys where all you can say is, gotta respect it. You know, gotta respect his decision.
I relate every fit.
Wait, that was Leon. After the game one thing about his, like, not realizing what the score is, Leon replied to someone, he goes, gotta respect his decision. And someone was like, what are you talking about? It was the worst thing. He goes, I know, but you gotta respect it.
Yeah, he's the only, like, if J.R. Smith, like, acts like he hit the button to start a nuclear war. Because he's like, oh, damn, I thought they were launching missiles at us. I'd be like, well, that's like him. Because I said it already, but it's like every family has a J.R. Smith.
I wish my family had a J.R. Smith. That would be awesome.
But it really, people, when you talk about
every podcast has a J.R. Smith.
I wonder who it is. I wonder who it is who sometimes has like...
You're a shooter. You're our shooter,
I wonder who sometimes has game-winning lines, sometimes doesn't know what's going on, forgets what the topic of the episode is. I wonder who sometimes sleeps through an episode. I wonder who shows up to an episode after playing games until 6 a.m. and saves the episode. I wonder who that is.
When people,
maybe Matt.
For me... The LeBron Jordan comparison, one thing to just really try to do as a mental exercise is imagine Jordan trying to wrangle the herd of dipshits and fuck-ups that he's had to work with almost his entire career.
Right.
He would have fucking lost it. He would have been like Billy Blanks at the beginning of Last Boy Scout. He would have fucking murdered everybody at practice. The idea that he could have handled people who just this chronically fucking incompetent is just not something that would work.
No, he punched Steve Kerr in the face, and Steve Kerr is like the most competent teammate of all time, and he couldn't even.
He would have fucking rolled J.R. Smith in a carpet and dropped him into fucking Chicago River.
Well, as others have pointed out, Jordan was basically the only human being in history with the power and the dragon energy to rock the Hitler mustache after Adolf sort of ruined it for everyone else.
And but nobody said shit to him.
He was in a Hanes commercial with a Hitler mustache. Yeah.
Yes, Stephen Haynes IV was on set going, that's fine, Michael. You do you.
We've got to love those tagless undershirts.
That
was a revolution. The tagless undershirt was a huge game changer.
Everyone complained about bacon collar. Not anymore.
Yeah.
I still don't know what the fuck bacon collar is.
Oh, it's where the
like ripples.
Where your shirt looks like a shirt.
All of my shirts have that.
Colangelo could use some of those fucking low profile collars.
Michael Jordan, like, I can't explain what he dressed like. He dressed like what I imagine like Erdogan's sons dress like. Like just huge, not really baggy jeans, but they were sort of like, you know, the wet waving tube men. They were like that. They were like that. They looked like that around his
Legs.
Like
the things that are in front of a car dealership going
but
nuts.
Acid wash, okay, but also kind of like selvage looking. Michael Jordan, like, I think there was a period from about 2009 to 2013 where I didn't see a picture of him not wearing a corduroy jacket with like really tubular jeans.
No, his fashion is impeccable. Like the acid wash jeans, he should release his own line of jeans. Like the Jordans, we get it, man. You can move shoes. By the way, that whole Republicans buy sneakers too thing, he never said that. That's just like a common thing that you say to sound smart, and I say it all the time to trick people into thinking I'm smart. He never said that, but now Clay Travis named his book after that quote that Michael Jordan never said.
That's the perfect Clay Travis thing. That's the perfect conservative thing, just taking a quote that no one ever said.
Yeah, and attributing it to Thomas Jefferson.
And turning it into a wine.
As George,
Republican fans, Thomas said, too, you know.
As George Orwell once wrote, it was the best of times. They were pretty good times.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you. You know, you're in the sports media. You're in the sports talk radio business. And I wanted to bring up one of my personal favorites, probably my favorite of all time, the King, Mike Francesa. Have you noticed that he has just recently joined Twitter?
He joined Twitter, but he's only used a small fraction of the capabilities of the website. Yeah. So he's going to be rolling it out slowly. He's in beta testing right now. His tweets, I think he's getting things wrong in like record time. This is actually the worst thing that could happen to Francesa, because the best thing that he did was he would be wrong, but then he wouldn't have to address it for another 24 hours, and then something else would happen, and then he'd get to figure something else to be wrong about for later. So he kept like pushing it off and pushing off getting called out on it. But with Twitter, he's like getting called out on being wrong in instant. My prediction is he's going to probably deactivate within 6 months. Be like, this is a website full of losers. they shouldn't be allowed to talk to me. This is disgusting. I much prefer the intelligent banter of sports talk radio.
So one of the first things he said was like, "Don't waste my time." My replies, don't waste my time. But adapting to the medium in quite a unique fashion. I just want to share this with you. One of the first things I noticed he did. He did all of this like unthreaded. So like you would just come across this completely random in your timeline, like divorced of context. Mm-hmm. So he writes here, after the program today, I received this letter. Like that's just a single tweet, just farted into the void. And then he just tweets this old lady's letter to him. And he goes, "Hi, Mike, I'm writing you with sadness. My mother, Judy from Brooklyn, passed away. She was 88 years old. Over the years, she loved calling you up on the Fan to talk Yankee baseball. I want to thank you for your kindness. I want to thank you for your kindness to my mom over all those years. I know she hasn't had her transistor. I know she has her transistor radio in heaven and is following the Yankees, listening to you on the Fan from 3 to 6:30. I wish you luck on your return. This came from her son, Michael. Judy was a wonderful lady. Loved the Yanks and Spencer Tracy movies. May she rest in peace. Met her a few times at events. I liked her a lot." And then just right after that, without a pause, "The outspoken Steve Kerr says NFL's anthem policy is idiotic. He is absolutely right."
How disappointed would you be if you got to heaven and you had to listen to baseball on the train? No, can I get a TV?
No, she needs to listen to it on the Fan. He needs to listen to the talk radio to really get the...
Right, yeah, I don't see... Mike is too old school of a guy to think that just like anyone should be allowed to interact with him.
Yeah.
You know, like he's the Pope. He's a sports Pope. He needs to have, he liked it better, I'm sure, when he had like some sort of filter where he could look at that little, the screen of callers that he called in. And like, and oh, this guy thinks that they should trade Derek Jeter. Yeah, let me talk to him. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Like he liked being able to filter out the takes. This is going to be too much.
For yeah.
Him. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe. Like some lucky fans can be buried with Mike Francesa in the afterlife, and when they go to have like these people are listening to him in heaven.
Yeah,
they can be his servants in the afterlife, working as call screeners for him in eternity.
None of you people on here on this website, none of you have the insight or class of Tony Blueballs from West Orange.
I originally had the idea, I wanted to make a Chris Russo parody account to troll him on Twitter. To just respond to everything he says, Mikey, you're crazy.
I like it. I love it. I love it. Yeah, but I don't know. He's like a legend, and so I'm glad he's back on the air. Just for you know the video clips that you get to watch of him falling asleep while people are trying to talk to him. Yeah. Like when people call up and just make up players' names and ask for his take. Oh, that guy's a bum. He's a fraud.
So, just lastly on Francesa, I'm wondering, did you ever read the New Yorker profile of him? The New Yorker did a Talk of the Town piece about Mike and the Mad Dog back in the day, and it contains one of my favorite, like probably my favorite paragraph that's ever been in the New Yorker of anything that's ever appeared in there, and I just want to share it with you guys right now. This is from, again, a profile of Mike Francesa and his former partner, Chris Mad Dog Russo, New York City. New York area sports talk radio legends. It says here, Francesa and Russo have grown so accustomed to talking to each other about sports that they, even when they are talking about something else, they sound as if they're discussing a faked punt or a quirk in the Yankee schedule. A few years ago, circumstances placed the two of them for an hour or so in a hotel room together, a rare occurrence. When they are on the road, they often stay in separate hotels. I always stay in the best hotel, Francesa told me. Chris Carlin, their producer at the time, who now has a show of his own on WFAN, walked in to find them watching The Horse Whisperer. Carlin started to speak, but they shushed him. On the TV screen, Robert Redford was breaking up with Kristen Scott Thomas. When the scene was over, Russo said solemnly, Mikey, he had to do it. He had to do it. It was the right move, dog, Francesa replied. The right move.
That's how you know you're dealing with like a real sports guy when every single conversation sounds like it's like a solemn post game talk with like someone you just lost a game with, like that. The fact that they only speak to each other using sports metaphors is perfect, and it's not like it doesn't really explain anything interesting about their friendship or their relationship. It just speaks to the fact that when you spend 40 years doing nothing but watching sports, that's your only context that you have to go off of. So like Francesa doesn't—he probably doesn't know who the vice president is right now, if you ask him. but he can tell you who like the bench coach on the Yankees is, you know.
He also had a tweet just yesterday. It was May 29th, the birthday of one of my favorites, JFK.
He had an amazing ceiling. He never really was able to accomplish all he could. The career was cut short tragically.
Driving through Dallas in an open top car. Bad move. Bad move, Mikey. Bad call.
He was injury prone. What can I say?
Well, he did have a bad back. That's why he was on all those pills. Outside Francesa, like who's your favorite like sports media blowhard?
Jay Mariotti.
Yes.
Not even a question. Jay revolutionized the game. He was an amazing example of consistency with his ridiculous takes for, you know, 15, 20 years.
Didn't he get but he's had sort of a fall from grace though, right? He used to be like a mainstay on, you know, Around the Horn.
Yeah.
And then he fell even lower than that.
Yeah. He ran into some legal issues,
okay.
Put it that way. Ozzie Guillen started to butt heads with him when he was in Chicago, and that it triggered Jay to go into this like big spiral. And once Ozzie Guillen started making fun of him, it turns out that everybody else that had ever worked with Jay Mariotti had something bad to say about him too. And then he went out to the West Coast, and he's been working on a book, by the way. He tweets about it pretty frequently. He's working on a book that's just compiling people's tweets that are saying mean things to him. And he's gonna revolutionize the game. And he
thinks that, but when our book comes out, he's going to realize that we've beat him to the post.
Right.
that's exactly what our book is.
He's also got a podcast, or he had a podcast with Woody Page, the guy that he used to go head-to-head around the horn with.
Who also has like sexual harassment issues as well.
Woody, I don't know. I don't think Woody can find his dick, honestly. Like he's got one of those like bloated faces. I'm sure that his fupa is just enveloping his crotch right now. But he had, they did a podcast for like 2 weeks, and then Woody was like, I can't even handle you anymore, Jay. So now it's just Jay Mariotti doing unmuted. It's awful. It's awful. So I like Jay Mariotti a lot. I mean, I got to say, you know, Woody Page was great. All the old guys on Around the Horn, that was like, that was when sports were great.
Back when they first realized it was realized, the true golden age.
I was actually talking to Matt about this the other day. Yes. About like a, you know, real unemployment fail son hours.
Absolutely.
Where it's like you just like you get up of a day and like the goal is how can I make it to 5 o'clock when the sports talk comes on and then I can watch Sports Center and then it'll be the evening and I can like I won't have to you know torture my conscience with my own ineptitude and uselessness.
Yeah.
So yeah, once that Around the Horn came on, I was like, whew, yeah, safe. Another day in the books.
It truly was the Algonquin round table of the early 21st century.
The real battle was like getting between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock when you have to watch the Steve Wilkos show.
I solved that issue with Mike and the Mad Dog because the Yes Network would play their show on TV from like 3 to 6 o'clock. So yeah. that got me through a lot of dark moments.
Another big hero of mine is Rick Reilly. I gotta say, Rick Reilly has lived the best life. So Rick wrote, he was a feature writer for Sports Illustrated for maybe a dozen years, and then they moved him to the back page, which is like
Rich's
the first
musings
thing.
On golf,
musings on golf,
and being a father,
and just a lot of crocodile jokes about like their teeth. He was a big tooth joke guy, so he'd be like, this guy's busier than a crocodile dentist, and he would use it once a month, like the same joke, and then. You know, he was such like an attraction. People would always read that stupid column at the end of Sports Illustrated that ESPN came in. I think they paid him like $3 million a year, but they didn't really know what to do with him. They were just like, we need Rick Reilly. We need his mojo over at ESPN. And so they got him there, and then he started plagiarizing himself where he would actually just copy and paste his old articles and just rewrite them. And they're like, Rick, what are you doing? You can't do this. And then he kept doing it over and over and over again. And they just put him on the sidelines for the last like 4 years of his contract and paid $2 million a year to do nothing, to do absolutely nothing. And now he lives in Italy where he makes jokes on Twitter 24 hours after an event happens. you can set your watch. Rick wakes up the next day on the Amalfi Coast or whatever and says the exact same joke that somebody tweeted 24 hours.
So it's like Bobby Bonilla still getting paid by the Mets to do nothing.
It's exactly, yeah.
I remember I was on an airplane with him one time. I walked past him. He was in first class, of course. And I remember because I'm not a bad flyer, but I always kind of get morbid before I get on an airplane because anything can happen. And I remember thinking, well, there's no way this plane's crashing. Rick Reilly will never die. Certainly not in a fucking plane crash. Right. He'll die at age 500 on a fucking like hyper pillow that gives you endless orgasms.
My favorite annual column that Reilly would write would be he would get to go to the Sports Illustrated swimsuit shoot. Every year, and he would bring his son. And his son, we got to watch his little boy become a man from the age of maybe 9 until 13. And then the last one was like Rick just talking about how cool it was to see his son be horny. Around, he finally gets it. It's a special moment in his life.
That you know, the cat's in the cradle moment when his son got to be like one of the guest painters to paint on the sort of like the bikinis that are just like, you know,
airbrush.
Yeah.
He was like, when he was 9 years old, he didn't really, you know, he would be like, oh, dad, do we have to go to the beach again for the stupid shoot? And then when he was 13, I couldn't keep his eyes off him when they were changing. That's my boy.
So, and now he's just ruined for the rest of his life because he's just expecting a bunch of women to show up in fucking bikinis and shit and ask him to help tie him on, and it doesn't happen.
Well, that's
he's turning into Elliot Rodger.
That's why you have. It's like T-ball, right? Like you have to start your son off jacking off to the Sears catalog to like ease him in, and then maybe if he shows like proficiency at that, you can take him to the swimsuit issue thing,
right?
So, I mean, obviously the sports media field, usually, you know, like the political media is, of course, filled with unbelievable gas bags and morons. But, God, the sports media is so rich in that, too.
They actually take themselves more seriously than political media.
Yeah, I think
media.
They do.
Yeah. Which, I mean, when you think about it, sports is more important than anything else. Like, it's the bread and circus. And without the bread and circus, then you have to focus on stuff that actually matters, and nobody wants to think about that. So if you're in charge of, if you're a sports media personality, like the biggest nuisance that you can run into in your day is like the line for the cold cuts being like a little bit too long, or the coffee is not hot in the press box, or heaven forbid somebody claps in the press box, because you have to remain perfectly neutral and unbiased and shoot right there. They're like your guy, Saliza. Everybody is a Saliza in sports media, because you can't root for one team or the other. You just root for the storylines, and what storyline is going to be easiest to draw analogies to Game of Thrones for.
There is like a type of personality, like the most powerful type of personality in the world. Donald Trump has it. Tommy Wiseau has it. Dan Quinn has it. Brian Pumper has it. And most of the guys we've discussed in sports media have it, where it's like just, it's self-assurance, but also like this level of weirdness that like, there are people who are self-assured, and those are athletes because they're amazing at something. But then there's that level of self-assuredness that comes with not being really good at anything that just makes you like a very strange person that can never be wrong and contorts yourself in these weird ways and makes this bizarre mythology and hierarchy about yourself. And I think political media, they're not as self-important as sports media, maybe just because they hate themselves.
Yes.
Everyone in political media fucking hates themselves, and they're right to. Like, they're garbage. They're talentless, insecure, worm-like people. But in sports media, like, they're just as incompetent as political media, but they have that Dan Quinn, Donald Trump, Brian Pumper power where they're like, yeah, I'm the king. Well, everything I do is right.
All those fucking miserable political media people wish they were doing sports.
Yep.
Yeah. They wish they were doing sports, because in political media, like, again, you have to be like, crystallism mindset, like that's why he's the king.
He's the king,
which would drive any like normal person insane. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like to behold that level of intelligence, it would be like if, you know, a rat suddenly had human awareness. If you could get to Saliza brain, it would drive you mad instantly. But like, they essentially have to feign neutrality on things that do have real world consequences, but for which there is no ever really any definitive resolution or victory to any one side or the other outside of elections. But then, you know, come and go, that like elections is the closest thing they have, but there's,
that's why they love them so much.
Yeah.
Because it gives them something, like, an objective thing that they can report on. Someone is going to win this on this day.
Whereas I think you're right that sports media people do take themselves more seriously, because I feel like that they feel like they're invested in something in which like the outcome is final and objective.
I think that's definitely a part of it. I also think that a lot of people in sports media grew up wanting to be athletes. And so what they did when they realized that they couldn't be an athlete, they turned arguing about sports into a sport.
Into, like around the horn. Yeah. Yeah, like, or pardon the interruption.
They gave you points.
Yeah. And so now
fucking
they are
around
in
the
their
horn,
minds,
you get points.
They're athletes. So I'm an athlete. Just my, you know, my, field of play is, you know, sitting in front of a computer and blogging
would,
for 5 hours.
On fucking part around the horn, they would say like 2-time defending champion.
Yeah.
Of what? Yeah. Having a fucking this fucking Tony Reale deciding that your argument about how gritty Alex Rodriguez is was worthy of a point.
Yeah. I think Tony's reached a point where like he's in on the joke a little bit. He realizes how ridiculous the whole setup is. But Jay Mariotti never got to that point. This was life and death for Jay, which it's sad. I'd like to see him make a comeback. I mean, he never will on ESPN, but we can dream.
The political media people, I think a lot of them, they didn't even dream of being politicians, because I think they realized like early on, it's like, I just like anyone who sees me just instantly fucking despises me. But they did. They have this like impulse that people will find them important or loved, and it drives them insane. And the highest thing you can achieve in political media is to be like this elder statesman thing, to be like fucking Tom Brokaw or someone, where it's like, you, they have worked in the news for over 45 years. You cannot, do you know about their contributions to the news? So it's like a little troop like almost.
Yeah, or I mean, you could strive to be Jesse Waters too. That's pretty impressive.
Jesse,
that's my guy. That guy is. I'm trying to think who
he just
who
got fucking. He got
like
quoted
him
by the president just yesterday.
That's incredible.
For got, what?
Something
a segment on Waters World.
He said the only thing that
this lady
the only
speaks
thing
in
that,
a weird
that,
accent.
President Trump. The only thing President Trump colluded on was beating Hillary or something like that.
Oh, that's,
and he says
that's pretty good.
That's right. And so he's being fucking quoted by the president on Twitter. That's winning. I mean, poor Maggie Haberman does all this work to stay in his good graces, and all he does is shit on her. Fucking Jesse Waters scotch tapes his eyes to do Chinese accents on fucking O'Reilly Factor. He's getting quoted by the president.
You don't understand satire. You don't understand satire. That was brilliant.
The ultimate Saliza mindset. I was just thinking about this the other day, in the context of the Samantha Bee controversy. Saliza was responding to that, and he just said, you know, we all feel very strongly about things, but bullying and insults are never okay, and it will never make your argument look good to say these words or to insult people like that. And shout out Paul Blessed, who responded, didn't you literally call Donald Trump the king of insults a week ago? That was his compliment. He was like, hey, say what you will about Donald Trump, but he loves telling insults, and boy, oh boy, do they work for him.
I feel like Saliza imagines himself as Caesar Milan, and he's just being calm, assertive, just correcting everybody's behavior left and right. But it's just a pack of rabid dogs that don't give a shit about what he says. But in his mind, he's the only one that can make sure that the discourse stays in the correct area.
Yeah, he's a labradoodle trying to act as as a herding dog for feral hogs.
There's the political media and the sports media, and obviously Saliza, he has to cover people like Trump and those clowns in Congress, but sports, you have to cover athletes. So who, in your opinion, who's the funniest athlete? Who is the biggest brain genius athlete right now, or just anyone in general, all time?
J.J. Watt could be an elaborate performance starter. J.J. Watt might actually be the National Guard paying the NFL $10 million a year to engineer a big marketing campaign for joining the military, because he's basically Captain America. I don't think he's that self-aware. If I'm being honest, I think Chris Long is pretty fucking funny. He's got into this thing recently where he trolls hockey Twitter by praising NBA players and saying that they're tougher than hockey players. And the whole joke is obviously everybody knows that hockey players are fucking tough, right? Okay, yeah. That one idiot on the Capitals last night skated into the boards and broke his nose in pregame, and he was out there for his first shift and didn't miss a beat. They've had guys almost die on the ice and beg to be checked back into the game. But Chris likes to make fun of the fact that hockey Twitter is probably they're the most sensitive group of people. We call them the please like my sport people. If you ever talk trash about hockey, they will swarm you. And so he just goes over the top. He's like, you see LeBron James play 40 minutes last night. You'd never see a hockey player play that. And he'd be like, the hockey players take too many breaks and they go on these shifts, and it's just a mark of a lazy athlete. And of course, the joke is also Chris Long was a third down pass specialist for the Eagles and the Patriots. So he plays one out of every six or seven snaps out there. But then all the hockey players were I think the Daily Caller wrote a blog about Chris Long's problematic hockey tweets and how he was using it to actually trash the NHL, not understanding the context whatsoever. But he's pretty funny, I think.
I have an entry from MMA.
Okay, let's hear it.
Little backstory. In the UFC's flyweight division recently, Jared Brooks was attempting to slam his opponent, Jose Torres. He had him, he was holding him, about in the air, and he's trying to slam him down to the mat to, get him down there and, knock him out or submit him. And in the process, Brooks knocked himself out. And this is after the fight. This is on Twitter. He's adding Jose Torres. You're lucky that I knocked myself out. You didn't do shit to me that whole fight. Just seen you after fight interviewed. Well played. But if we run that shit back, I beat you 9 times out of 10. And the only time you do is me KOing myself. So he's saying that there's always going to be a 10% chance of himself knocking himself out. There isn't really that many clever guys on MMA Twitter. There's just really things will just be sort of normal stupid guy banter where it's a very pixelated drawing where it's lots of people are fake nowadays, that type of thing. But sometimes you'll just get something absolutely insane or jarring, like Sage Northcutt and his just a video of him doing a backflip, and he's Sunday's awesome, where he's hypertrophied Rod and Todd. Or you'll just get white guys saying the N-word a lot.
Yeah.
It's the last sports domain in America where the white guy athletes just publicly drop soft N-words all the time. And there has to be a thing every week where people have to tell these guys
who like have to do a correspondence course to formally finish eighth grade as 26-year-olds, like with it, they can't say that. And they're like, well, I have black training partners. It's okay.
Some of the, yeah, some of my favorite guys to punch in the face are black. I'm allowed to say it. I think it was Darren Revelle who said that this whole 76ers mess could have been prevented if teams put in social media training for their front office employees. It's like, do you really think that like saying, hey, don't create 5 burner accounts and like tweet at players and reveal like HIPAA and commit HIPAA violations on Twitter? Like, he was going to do that anyways. I don't think that there's like a 30-minute seminar at the airport that you can take that is going to prevent that. I mean, Ray Allen is an all-time great.
Yeah.
His tweet of, I'm on my way. Just imagine my tongue and dick going back and forth between your clit and your pussy, and then my dick and your clit and my tongue on your clit, and just let me know when you come. And it was supposed to be a DM very clearly.
Sex gifts. Oh, yeah.
I'm like thinking of getting into baseball. A lot of my friends follow baseball, but they...
You're thinking of getting into baseball?
Yeah, I need another hobby besides war, by which I mean Fortnite. But
let's go to a game this summer.
Okay, I would love to. I love going to baseball games.
Finally, let's go to the Mets.
Okay, so turning around to my way of seeing things. Excellent.
No, I actually like watching baseball. I just never do it. But my friends love. They've told me this is like the best dumb guy athlete, Trevor Bauer.
Oh yeah, he is a stone dullard.
Yeah, he cut his finger off with a drone.
King. Yeah. All right, I'm definitely getting into baseball now.
And he's like a MAGA tweet guy too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No, Trevor's a funny guy.
Didn't he put like Bush did 9/11 or Bush did WTC like on the mound?
He wrote BD 9/11 on the mound.
Was that Bauer that did that?
Yes. And people don't know. I don't think he ever said specifically what it was, but a lot of people speculate that it's Bush did 9/11. You really, if you're enticed by dumb guys, Felix, baseball is for you.
It might have
the dumbest guys, like as like a football baseball players might be the dumbest athletes.
They're my type of dumb guys.
Another guy, he doesn't play in the league anymore. He plays in Korea now. Was named Luke Scott, and he was just a parody of a MAGA chud. He would just do casual racism in the locker room, and he did a thing, I think it was for ESPN, where he just drove around in his car and talked about how he liked to keep the doors unlocked because he wanted to encourage a carjacker because he had a gun in his glove compartment and he was just willing to shoot anybody who tried to steal his car.
He was just doing bait car for himself.
Yes, yes.
He definitely had a dashboard cam on himself, though.
Yeah.
Baseball players seem like they're my types of dumb guys, like the very like self-assured like stupid white guy.
Oh yeah, well they all want to be cops.
The
whole baseball code thing, it's all these guys getting to be police officers. Like a guy like Brian McCann, who's a longtime catcher, his whole thing is policing the unwritten rules, making sure that nobody walks too slowly around the bases when they hit a home run, or too fast either. Mm-hmm. There's exactly like there's a precise speed that you have to round the bases, or else you're showing up the pitcher and he will fucking end your shit. Like and there's a lot of them like that. They have cop mustaches. They just wish that they could have a gun. If they could play baseball with like a police utility belt and gun and a fucking and the taser and shit, they would love it.
I think umpires should have guns. Actually, umpires, referees. Especially in football, like make sure that you like if someone comes at you and they're arguing, that's a stand your ground situation. I was brought up to respect authority, and
the way I think there should be a gun to a halftime gun kata show.
Yeah,
if I like the idea of officials having guns, but not like an out carry, like stuffed into their belt, so that if somebody comes and starts yelling at it, they can just casually lift the front of their shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Like in Menace to Society or whatever, and then just put it away and get them to walk.
Yeah, I also I'm also a big fan of the unwritten rules. Those are my favorite arguments to get into. Like, well, this guy bunted to break up a no hitter. Is that should we throw a 99 mile an hour fastball in his face? And then like last week there was a slide. I think Rizzo on the Cubs slid into home plate like a little clumsily, hit the catcher, but then the Pirates didn't throw at Rizzo the next time he came up to bat. And so it's then like, wait, are the Pirates disrespecting the unwritten rules by not enforcing the unwritten rules? And then the Cubs should throw out the Pirates to make sure that next time someone disrespects the unwritten rules, you respect the unwritten rules and you beat them next time.
Yeah. And the idea that the enforcement mechanisms for these things that are just, it's just basically like a ladies' tea party situation. It's like, it's the baseball equivalent of like extending your pinky when you're drinking your tea. The punishment for that should be having a professional athlete throw a fucking baseball at your fucking head. Mm-hmm. That's the punishment that fits the crime.
Whoa, hold on a second. Wouldn't our politics be better, you know, if these norms could be enforced by throwing a fastball at Mitch McConnell's head? Well, maybe there'd be more bipartisanship if there was enforcement of the unwritten rules of politics.
What Matt said was perfect, though, because that's the perfect, like, Midwestern, Southern dumb guy shit, where it's, like, tons of just, you actually break it down, it's all catty bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
It's all, like, you're a fake friend. You owe me gas money. You took my headphones. Well, at least I raised my kids. Like, that type of thing. But it just always ends in spectacular, horrifying violence. So it's perfect. Like, this is my sport. After MMA is, after John McCain is uploaded to an AI and becomes president and finally bans the UFC, I'll be happy to go to baseball.
I think that there's something to that. Like, there needs to be enforcers in politics. Like, each party should have, you know, like in hockey, you got one tough guy. Each party gets one guy that's allowed to get into fights on the House floor. And then, well, we've been like dancing around for a while with elected officials like Jesse the Body Ventura. Like
Lamar Alexander.
Yeah, there you go. If you're going to have Jesse the Body and you're not going to use him to start a fight, like, what's really the purpose there?
Yeah, if you had Senate goons.
Yeah.
Like, imagine just a guy when John McCain, like, triumphantly returned in his wheelchair and the Democratic goon. Like, I guess, are there any athletes who ended up being, they're usually end up as Republicans, right?
Yeah,
right?
Jim Bunning, yeah. Steve Largent.
Yeah, if you have them just show it, like, imagine he just, like, tips McCain over the press gallery in the second row, and they're like, okay, we have to let like, I guess the Republican goon would be
Dennis Hastert.
He was a wrestling coach.
He was a wrestling coach, yes. Yeah.
Well, there was one guy, one visionary who had an idea on how to enforce norms on politicians when they're playing baseball, but it might be a little ahead of his time.
You know, they actually did have a goon one time. It was Jim Trafficant.
Yeah.
He would just threaten to kick everybody in the crotch if they like didn't sign his letter of intent to abolish the IRS or whatever. That guy was awesome.
He was so cool.
Jim Trafficant and Lincoln Chafee are my two favorite all time politicians.
They would make a great buddy cop duo because they are really, it's like fire and ice.
Yeah.
You've got this weedy, sort of dorky, blue blooded nerd. Oh, I buy the book. I don't know, Jim. And Jim Trafficant, this wild, literal mafia tied Midwesterner. Yeah. Like, fuck it. His fucking weird hair piece stopping in the air. Yeah.
Beam me up, right?
That's what beam me up. Yeah.
Beam me up at the end of everything.
Yeah. And then he died because he fell off his tractor.
Ted Stevens would have been a goon too.
When you got near his earmarks, he fucking roided out.
Well, he loved the Hulk. He loved hulking out.
He hulked out like crazy.
But Sumner, who is the guy? Was Sumner?
Sumner
the guy
got cane.
He beat the guy to death with a cane.
And the guy who got beat.
Charles Sumner. Preston Brooks beat him up.
Didn't an abolitionist challenge Brooks to like a duel? And he was like some great duelist. And Brooks like pussied out.
Well, he did. I mean, he pussied out in that he intentionally attacked Sumner when he was sitting down in the Senate because he had like a foot on him, mm-hmm. and he didn't want to have a fair fight because he was worried he'd get beat. So he just started clubbing him while he was sitting in this chair, which was very constrictive, and he literally couldn't stand. So he was just beating a man who was essentially incapacitated already. He was a total bitch, and he died shortly after, which is good.
They should get Rand Paul's neighbor to be a goon.
Yes.
Yeah. That guy can be
Rand Paul's neighbor will be the Terry Tate office linebacker of Congress. So he'll do both parties. Just if anyone
keep
gets
on their toes.
Alive, he's going to just lay
toes.
Him out full on.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you're doing another discretionary hold on a judge appointment? Speared.
All right. So before we wrap things up today, we did want to check in with you. We've been talking about the merging of sports morons and political morons, and this is the perfect topic, the perfect author. Wouldn't you know it, friend of the show, Megan McArdle, registered a take in the Washington Post called a defense of Roger Goodell that, you know, I would be remiss without getting your thoughts on.
I'd just like to point out that this, she actually plagiarized that for me. I wrote an article in defense of Roger Goodell like 4 years ago. So just from the get-go, I like it a lot because it's my own take that she's recycling.
I haven't read this. I'm going to just make a shot in the dark guess. Does she start off by saying, bear in mind, I don't watch football or know anything about sports, but it seems to me that this is how things should go.
Not quite.
Because I can't believe she's a football fan. I mean, maybe she is. I don't know. I don't know what any of these ghouls like. I mean, when I think of Megan McArdle, I honestly just imagine her standing stock still in her incredibly well-appointed kitchen, just staring at the wall.
I think the basic premise...
Or just cutting fucking carrots until she has a giant pile of them.
Like Clooney in Burn After Reading.
Yes.
I think what she's like getting at is that Roger Goodell is in a tough spot.
Yeah.
And therefore, we shouldn't be allowed to criticize
it. It goes
right?
back to what I said about, that's exactly what she's going to do. It goes back to my J.R. Smith thing. You just got to respect his decision.
Got to respect Goodell. Yeah, he gets $30 million a year. His job, he has a great job. I mean, his job is to be paid $30 million a year to just get made fun of.
Yeah.
Like his job is to deflect any criticism from the owners and just take it himself.
He's the world's most compensated dunk tank clown.
Yes.
So, and like, taking the heat in this regard would be like this new policy that if NFL players want to kneel for the national anthem, they have to do it in the locker room. You have to stand if you're on the field. This is the new NFL rule.
Yeah. Well, that would actually have been more easy to understand than what they ended up doing, which was they leave it up to the team to stay in or out of the locker room. But if you come out for the national anthem, and you either kneel or show disrespect to the flag, which is very like a very nebulous term, like is facing away from the flag disrespect. Is like it's 90 degrees away. Is that disrespect?
It's just sort of subtly rolling your eyes. Like,
what about doing a jerk off hand motion?
Yeah, jerk off hand motion or crying like no Sean Moreno. Like, is that disrespectful to the flag? Or is that actually, should you get like an extra 2-point conversion?
You have to cry.
Patriotic?
You have to cry. It's not respectful to see the flag and not weep at its sight.
Game doesn't start until John Elway comes on the side. Yeah. So what they did was they put this new rule in. They say, okay, well, if you disrespect the anthem, then it's a 15-yard penalty. Yeah. So they've like incorporated the national anthem now into the laws of the game, which is the one thing that they were trying to like avoid at all costs. But the NFL doesn't know how to handle any crisis without making themselves like a de facto branch of law enforcement.
Yeah.
So this was the most hated rule in the NFL used to be the catch rule because nobody knows what a catch is. They have to review it 9 times and it takes, 30 minutes for a guy sitting in an office in New York to make a ruling on it. And now they've gone and they've turned the kneeling rule into the new catch rule where they're going to have to do like video replay reviews of whether or not a player's knee was on the ground. Was he kneeling during the national anthem? They're going to have a kneeling analyst probably, which I've submitted my name for. Like I will do full on national anthem analysis for Fox NFL Sunday. No questions asked.
Could they have like a incentive system too, where it's like if you one of the players gave up their first class seat for a troop on the way there, they get like a 10-yard gain. Or if like you're scouting players in college, if you see like a lineman at FSU or something knock out an atheist professor, he gets just like a bot like first round draft pick.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, JJ Watt would be the league MVP for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have
was
an
the
idea.
Hero of Marine Todd.
I've got an idea. How about they just don't play the fucking national anthem before a goddamn sporting event?
Yeah, it's
now you're getting ridiculous.
Whoa, Matt.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is like everyone takes it for granted, but why stop there? I don't know if people know this, but in India, they play the national anthem before movies when you go to a movie theater. Well, why don't we do that? Why are we disrespecting the flag by not standing for the anthem before we watch the fucking book club or whatever? Doing that?
I play it before I have sex.
why don't we play it at restaurants? Before you eat, which, by the way,
idea.
You do. This is a follow-up thing I found out about that. The Troop Steakhouse, the Troop Barbecue restaurant that we talked about a while ago, is that on, I think, like at noon every day, they do play the national anthem and everyone is expected to stand like with a fucking bib and a bunch of rib grease on your fingers. But why isn't that national? Why? Well, it's like, why don't? Where are you deciding that this is the a precise amount of respect that the anthem and the troops need? What there's always more places to be giving troops respect and the flag respect. Why aren't we doing it there?
I think that the national anthem should be played 5 times throughout the day, and no matter where you are, you have to drop what you're doing to kneel and face Fort Benning. Yes. That's where the Green Berets
are. And maybe
are,
we could put big towers in every city with a guy whose job it is to go up there and give the call to the anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Call to respect,
call
to valor.
To call to respect.
Maybe, here's an idea. Maybe
it's actually, Carl Lewis has that job.
I got an idea. 30 days a year, there's 1 month a year where you fast from dawn to dusk thinking about the troops. You can't eat during the day or drink. You have to do it after dusk for 30 days each year. How about that?
Yeah, and you think about the sacrifices and the battle that they're fighting on an ongoing basis. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then the problem with this is like there's going to be a succession struggle. You're going to disagree with whether Luke Bryan or Jason Aldean is the successor to Garth Brooks. Who's the true, sort of rightfully guided ruler?
The Battle of Branson decided that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. That was an inconclusive battle. Aldean's forces were surrounded, but they sort of emerged as a stalemate. And also Luke Bryan worships fire. Okay, he crawls around the floor of CMT Studios like a snake. It's disgusting.
The Luke Bryan people go every year. They make a pilgrimage to Branson and they flog themselves with cowboy belt buckles.
The government of Tennessee is under fire for safety hazards at the Grand Ole Opry Hodge.
The problem was the Jason Aldean forces just didn't have the high ground.
Well, if you look at, I think it's in Pittsburgh every year, they have the Kenny Chesney concert and the aftermath of that. That's basically the Hodge for country.
Oh, it is. 25. Yeah. I just saw this. 25 tons of garbage were recovered from the from the Kenny Chesney concert.
All right, let's dive into McArdle's defense of Roger Goodell. So she begins by writing, "Whatever you think of Roger Goodell, commissioner of the National Football League, you should recognize that he's trying to solve a genuinely hard problem, or rather two hard problems. On one hand, he's trying to maximize the audience for NFL games. At the same time, he's also trying to negotiate the same fraught racial politics that our nation has been struggling with for centuries, but in miniature and in prime time." Mm-hmm. So those are the two problems he's trying to solve. Nearly 70% of NFL players are black. Why wouldn't those players want to use their privileged position to highlight one of the most pressing problems facing their community today? But the last time the Nielsen Year in Sports report broke down the numbers in 2013, football viewership was 15% black, but 77% white. Only 35% of whites are sympathetic to the Black Lives Matter movement, which seems a reasonable proxy for their sympathy for the kind of in-your-face protests that refusing to stand for the national anthem
it's
represents.
It's totally in my face!
I have to watch the part of the game where they sing the song.
I mean,
and they're just there doing it.
It's
I'm
really more into the song part. The sports is just everyone having a good time blowing off steam after the song.
Right. The crazy part is everybody watches the Red Zone channel now anyway, so we don't even see the national anthem. We the games start and then people file their reports on who kneeled and who didn't kneel for the national anthem. So it's like, no one's actually outraged in real time. We just find out about it later.
I actually have a kneeling fantasy league where, it's like a big, me and a bunch of guys are betting. I've picked the players most likely to kneel, not just in football, like also in baseball, cricket for some reason. I've actually wasted a lot of spaces in my roster in cricket. I forgot they don't play the American national anthem there.
Right.
And esports, who's starting the game in Overwatch by making their character crouch.
By the way, before the Overwatch tournament, do they do the national anthem? Do they stand for
They play the
anthem?
Overwatch national anthem, which is Lady Gaga song.
I do like how in any one of these, in any situation where Megan feels the need to comment, what compels her to comment is her instinctive sympathy for someone in an absurd position of power.
Yeah.
That's the only thing she cares about.
So let's be clear. Whites should be more sympathetic to the problem of racial inequities in the criminal justice system. If cops treated whites the way they treat blacks, white people would not be arguing that crime is the real problem and that profiling is just statistics. Of course, Megan has argued that on numerous occasions herself. They'd be frantically calling for legislators and muttering about the Second Amendment. But few human beings of any color are as keenly alive to the suffering of others as they are to their own travails. So however desirable, it seems unlikely that white America en masse will suddenly muster towering outrage about a problem that doesn't much affect them, not even if they see athletes protesting it on national television. So she's describing like a real moral and political schism in American culture, but as usual in Megan's inimitable way. She finds a way to like describe both sides of it in the most banal way possible without ever really getting to the heart of.
Yeah.
She just sort of like just states both sides, doesn't really say anything about either of them.
Yeah.
It seems her take is just you might not agree with what Roger Goodell says, but I will defend to death his right to say it. his right to fuck it up as much as possible. And there's really no take that she has coming out of it. But I think that there is an elegant solution that the NFL could employ, which is like, let's skip past this First Amendment bullshit and let's just say, let's bring back the Third Amendment and you should be allowed to kneel for the anthem if you quarter a troop. you have to room and board with a troop for that week, and then you have permission to kneel.
So she describes that NFL viewership is down 17% since 2015, which, as you've pointed out, is just all TV ratings are down that same percent.
Also, football is bad now. Football games are hard to watch because they've done all these rule changes, and they take forever. It just seems to me that they're more boring than they used to.
Oh, Matt, you're right, though. She goes, attendance and public perception about the NFL are also hurting. There's a robust debate over whether the protests are contributing to the decline, but we'll sidestep that since I know little about the sport and the opinions of people who do know something.
There we go.
Largely seem to be conveniently correlated with their opinions about the protests.
There we go.
So again, she's never ever going to say, whether it's right or wrong, whether an athlete should be able to kneel for the national anthem and not have their job threatened. Yeah. Or
white supremacy. Yeah. Opinions differ.
Yeah. So she goes, the decline of football may be inevitable, but even so, it's probably a bit much to expect an NFL commissioner to say, I guess we're doomed, and seek meaning in the impending death by sending the league on, quote, a suicide charge against racial inequality.
That you just... Literally, they were wearing detonation vests and killing the cops that were protecting them. It's unbelievable.
And she goes, I'm not going to read all of this, but she goes, the solution that the league's owners actually chose was the kind of mushy compromise America used to specialize in, designed to please no one but satisfy everyone. McArdle believes that is like the height of morality. But she goes here, which encapsulates another problem that this country is struggling to solve. The burgeoning politicization of every facet of American life, and not just the vague patriotism of playing the national anthem at sporting events, but the specific political vision of one of our nation's two warring tribes. And then she just goes into talking about tribalism.
We live in a society. Thank you, Megan.
Everyone's in a tribe except Megan.
She goes, there's a deeper and arguably more important objection. A healthy society needs to foster spaces where we forget about our political divisions and unite over something else. Without those spaces, we don't have the common reservoir of goodwill, of shared identity, from which durable political change must ultimately be forged. So what she's saying here is NFL players or any black person concerned about the way the cops treat them, you're going to have to take the L on this one, at least as far as football goes. Because it's a space that we all need to come together in. And as you said, Matt, if they really wanted to be apolitical, how about just cut out the fucking national anthem?
Yeah, how about we don't have a fucking caravan of Bradley fighting vehicles doing donuts in the fucking field before the game?
Don't you take away my flyover. Don't you do it.
I mean, like, most entertainment that people consume is devoid of politics. Like, that's the dumbest thing about this take. Like, if you broke it down by age, like, you would find... By my rough estimate, there's about like 2 million, maybe, probably less than that, people in all combined American media markets who want to consume like cable news all the time. But the rest of it, which is like Jake Paul, professional Overwatch, Takeshi 6ix9ine, these are all apolitical things. Whatever like network show people like that's called like, you know, The Nanny's Wife or whatever the fuck people like, it's all totally apolitical. It is taking a belt sander to your brain. You feel very nice. Nothing. Most people don't care about politics. Most people don't vote.
What Megan is doing here is creating equivalency between Kaepernick or any politically active African-American athlete who wants to use their platform to highlight the injustices in America's judicial and policing, and someone who gets insanely mad because for 10 seconds at the beginning of their weekly wing and beer fest, they have to look at someone who disagrees with them. Like, she's saying like that is like equally intolerant, or like that's equal
hostility.
Hostility.
You're being hostile to the fucking corn-fed rube
racist to make up the NFL fan base.
She says most people don't want to immerse ourselves in politics 24/7. In fact, most people can't stand it. But like she's saying, like it's 10 seconds, it's 5 seconds.
And you know, most people never watched it before this. People had, and Kaepernick was doing it for a while, and nobody even noticed.
Right. At first, he was like sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah.
He wasn't even kneeling, and then I guess he talked to maybe Nate Boyer or one of the former military guys that was in the NFL. And they said, hey, how about you kneel? And so now he kneels like it's a recommendation from a real live actual troop that said, hey, just kneel. That's not disrespectful. And so now he kneels. But now that's a bigger problem.
Well, because it's anything that questions the order is disrespectful because it's a threat. You're threatening my man cave. You're threatening the sanctity of my fucking meat neck existence. And therefore, I'm violently angry at you. But what the NFL is dealing with really, and if she wasn't a pinhead, she'd recognize this, is It's the double-edged sword of monopoly. This is the same thing that Facebook is dealing with and Twitter is that the idea that, well, you know, people can do what they want. It doesn't hold sand if you are a hegemonic thing. Like Facebook is essentially a monopoly, right? And in terms of sports, when you talk about like the most popular sport, it is NFL by a vast, vast amount. And there's no other football leagues. You know, they have an anti-monopoly exemption that allows them to be this absolute market bestriding colossus. And what that does is then you've created a totality where people want to feel represented because they have nowhere else to go. Like if they're on Facebook, there's no alternative to Facebook. If they want to watch football, there's no alternative to the NFL. So everyone needs to feel like they're being represented in it.
Hey, Vince McMahon, where are you?
You. The XFL 2020. Yeah.
See, they're talking about that. And who is going to bring it back as like the troop football alternative.
League, yeah.
And that's going to be awesome. Like, like landmines that will blow up if you kneel on the field during the national anthem, that kind of thing. Every half, you have the national anthem. Actually, no. After every touchdown, you have the national anthem. Mm-hmm. If we had that situation and there were a bunch of different NFL footballs, you could be more loosey goosey about it. But the NFL is this totality, so people want to feel like they are part of it. You know, yeah. And that's like this is the fucking bed you made, NFL, by being America's sport.
And this is like
we're all miserable shitheads who hate each other. That's part of being America.
And what I like about this piece is that McCardell, of course, cops to not understanding anything about sports or football. That's another standard move of her. If she's opining on a topic, she'll always make sure to qualify by saying, I know nothing of what I'm talking about.
She always buries in every article a caveat. You shouldn't have read this.
So she doesn't understand sports or football. She doesn't follow football. She certainly doesn't understand anyone who's upset about cops killing people.
Only in the most passionate hypothetical.
She certainly doesn't understand
bloodless
that.
Way.
But what she does understand is the position Roger Goodell is in, which is being a sort of front man for like a series of unaccountable oligarchs and their billion-dollar industry that literally grinds the lives of black people into grist and, you know, money for them.
Yeah, turns their brains into soup.
So the thesis for this article is, hey, just knock it off with Roger Goodell. He's, you know, he sucks. He makes bad decisions, but you shouldn't be mean to people.
He's doing his best.
Yeah.
Literally.
Roger Goodell is doing his best. The problem is that his best is really, really fucking bad. Roger Goodell is like, he's not a lawyer, and he'll be quick to remind you that he's not a lawyer, which means that he can get away with saying a lot of shit that a lawyer would get in trouble for saying. And his other technique, besides like this convoluted legal mumbo jumbo that he puts out, is to just issue statements that are so boring that you fall asleep after the second sentence. A typical Roger Goodell statement will be, the NFL is certainly observing and taking in all sides of this issue, and we are implementing certain protocols for pregame behavior that will ensure a continued success for game day experience for all of our fans. And it's like you just want to fucking die, and you don't care what else he says at the end of that statement. He could, like, you know, throw in Mein Kampf in the second paragraph and nobody would ever get to it.
Maybe that should be the true compromise. Like, if Megan was more competent, she would recognize that a compromise is not meeting somewhere in the middle, probably like closer to the right. It's taking all extremes. And what you could do is you start out the game with Roger Goodell saying, you know, that corporate statement speak, we're taking in all sides of this, we're trying to create the optimal experience, blah blah blah, then boom, national anthem, everyone stands, but then one troop is killed, but the troop is Bo Bergdahl, And everyone is happy. Everyone gets to do the thing that they like. Fans of Roger Goodell, of which there are many, get to experience him, and he gets to level the playing field. Fans of the anthem get to experience that. Enemies of American Empire get to enjoy something. But they're not taking away anything from the right wing people. They hate Bo Bergdahl. And we can keep finding deserters.
What this article is Megan is actually, she doesn't like sports, doesn't really like art or culture of any kind. Outside of, you know, cooking recipes and things like that.
I don't know anyone like that.
But she is a fan of Goodell because she's a fan of bloodless, soulless flax for corporations and billionaires, which is what she is. That's how she got her start.
That is
in the Koch Brothers Institute for Humane Studies.
That is an awesome type of person. Just like, I don't really like the games. It's kind of boring. But Roger Goodell, he just knocks it out of the park every time.
I'm just a fan of leadership.
She closes here saying, fervently supporting free speech doesn't necessarily imply that everyone should have to listen to that speech every waking moment, which is why you can support what the athletes are kneeling for and their right to speak forcefully for their opinions without retaliation or censure, and yet still recognize the wisdom of a Goodell-style compromise that leaves Americans at least a few arenas where they only have to root for one team at a time.
Oh, Roger, you left it
by the way,
without
retaliation or censor, like Kaepernick still doesn't have a job in the NFL because the owners literally colluded to keep him from one.
Or even a sponsorship deal.
Yeah.
Hey,
so
Roger Goodell, player of the year, though. He left it all at the field to keep the NFL apolitical.
He's a real blue collar commissioner.
he just shows up there.
He comes to commish every day.
He's the first guy in his office, last guy to leave his office every day. Real ham and eggs type of commissioner.
Yeah, he's not one of those showboats that you'd get in other leagues. Guys like Bud Selig, like flashy, sexy players like
Bart Giamatti. Yeah.
Kennesaw Mountain Landis.
Well, I think that about does it. For this week, thanks everybody for joining us. Thank you so much for letting us share our takes with you, sir.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure. Cheers, everybody.
Bye bye.
Till next time.
We should. I mean, I don't know why we're playing it because it's a significantly more successful show than ours. But part of my take on iTunes, Stitcher, check them out.
Do you want me to plug your show on your show? For all my listeners that are listening to. Okay. Hey, check out Chapo Trap House and buy their fucking book.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Awesome.
I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball.